Today's program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn, New American Cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
On Sunday, a Russian artist drew attention to the apathy, political indifference, and fatalism of contemporary Russian society by nailing his testicles to the cobblestones of Moscow's Red Square. No word yet on whether his stunt worked. Lawmakers in Hawaii and Illinois approved gay marriage bills, while Texas, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, Oklahoma, and West Virginia are refusing to comply with a Department of Defense order that gay spouses of National Guard members must be given the same federal marriage benefits as heterosexual spouses. U.S. troops have been sent to the Philippines to aid in recovery from Super Typhoon Haiyan. And the U.S. military's first female four-star general, Anne E. Dunwoody, was Grand Marshal of today's New York City Veterans Day Parade. 90 tons of salad and sandwich wraps have been recalled over fear of E. coli contamination. And Rupert Murdoch is allegedly dating his massage therapist. It's Veterans Day 2013, and this is How to Behave, the Veteran Artist Show. To my right, as always, Hannah Howard.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Hannah. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. I can hardly hear you.
Really?
Oh, there you are.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe it was my earphones.
I'm here.
So, it's finally fall, it feels like, in New York. Are you enjoying it?
This is my favorite season in New York. It's so beautiful, and I feel like the pre-holiday excitement is brewing, and it's not as sweaty on the subway platform.
I know, it's not, but I feel like there's this moment where it's nice and cool, and then you need your jacket because it's cold out, and then subway cars and everything else are heated like saunas, and...
That's true. It's very logistically annoying.
I sweat year-round. It's awful.
Right. There's no way to win.
No way to win. So we are joined in the studio today by B.R. McDonald, the founder of the Veterans Artist Project and a veteran himself. Happy Veterans Day, B.R.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Is that something we say, Happy Veterans Day?
Yeah, it's funny because I think we're starting to, which is good. I think it should be something that's celebrated. I think a lot of people think when they hear veteran, they don't always think happy. But I'm a happy guy, and I want people to smile.
Good. All right.
It's not like Yom Kippur.
You don't say happy Yom Kippur?
No, it's the Day of Atonement.
What do you say?
You wish people an easy fast.
An easy fast.
I don't know what the veteran equivalent is.
May this holiday be not too bad for
yes.
you. Yes. Yeah. So there was a great piece on you and your project in the New York Times today. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it was humbling. It was nice to see that.
So tell us about the Veterans Artist Project, VAP.
Yes. Right? So we are a national organization, 501c3 nonprofit. We started in Baltimore, actually, and about 4 years old, and just came to New York about 6 months ago to put VAP on a national stage. So what we do is we propel military veterans into the mainstream creative arts community. We do that through networking, mentorship, collaborations on all levels, and then original productions. And we just finished one this week, actually. It just culminated on Saturday night.
That's great, and I was lucky enough to be at Saturday night's performance, which was called The Telling Project, or it was part of a bigger project called The Telling Project?
Yeah, so the event that you saw was called Telling Project New York City, which is a project that goes all around the country and brings veterans and their family members on stage to tell their stories. Mm-hmm. But what that was part of a larger week-long event that VAP produced called the Arts and Service Celebration, and that was brought a lot of things together, but we had veterans who were pitching their projects, we had networking events, and then it culminated in some performances.
Awesome. So it was a successful week?
It was a hugely successful week. It was our first venture in New York City, but, I mean, it was really affirming because the reason I brought VAP to New York City was because this is the area, this is the region of America where artists are looking to create, you know, and looking mm-hmm. to take that next step in their careers, and veterans are no different. They're also artists and looking to take that.
That's awesome. So what can you tell me about the telling project and the thing that you did on Saturday night specifically with the six artists, yourself included, who are on the stage?
Yeah, so I've so the Veteran Artist Program has produced four telling projects now in D.C., Baltimore, and San Francisco, and then this, of course, in New York City. This was the first time that I got to be on stage along with five other veterans, and I have to tell you, it's always amazing to me. You know, veterans hold a lot on their shoulders. They whether it's for combat, through combat, or just generally life experiences. And what I've seen through the Telling Project is veterans choose that time to tell stories that they've never told before, which is interesting because it's on stage in front of an audience that they've never met, mostly of whom are a civilian population or audience that may have never been, you know, may not know a veteran or not been in this space.
Or who haven't had experiences right. similar to what they're hearing about.
Right. But I think what it is the Telling Project is a process. So what we did was about 3 weeks ago, we started interviewing with the creator and writer, Jonathan Way. And in my case, I just sat down with him on the phone for 2 hours and told my story. Next thing you know, he's transcribing that down and then writing it down and giving it back to me. So that's scary for anybody. You tell somebody's story, then they tell it back to you.
And he's editing it?
He's transcribing it. So
he's not just giving you back exactly what you said.
No.
All of it. He's like editing it down
right.
into...
Condensing it or making it flow or
yeah, it's making it flow. But so the ultimate what we did was a play. It was an hour and a half play that had a full arc, but it was veterans in sort of monologue fashion telling their story that's woven together. So what he does is he takes, you know, the whole story that I told and then puts it into context of what he hears based on the other interviews he did with other veterans, and then you get what you got on Saturday night, which is in a way, I was telling stories that I hadn't told before because I hadn't really thought about them that way. You know, we all, I think when we tell our own stories, we make assumptions about what people want to know, what they want to hear. So that was really cool.
Yeah. So there was six of you on stage telling each of your own stories, but intertwined all together. And it was really a beautiful show. It was really, really impressed. There was a guy who was a Marine and a ballet dancer.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
There was a young woman who was a singer, and I forget which branch she was in.
She was in the Army.
She
was a combat veteran who happens to be a musical theater performer, and she was an Asian female who was in the United States Army. So it's just these assumptions that I think people make about who is the veteran.
Yeah. Yeah, she was amazing. Like, tiny little Asian woman telling stories about being in a Humvee that gets blown up by an IED.
Translating for South Koreans
and moving.
In Iraq.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I'm really sad I missed this performance. It sounds awesome.
I know. If it had a run, I would be telling everybody. I would have gone to see it and said, everybody I know, you have to go see it. But is this a thing that... the show you did, is that going to see another audience? Or
We hope so. So to give you an example, the ones we did in Baltimore, we actually had seven performances of that. This one was designed to be part of this week. And the veterans you saw on stage are all prolific in their own right as actors and singers. And that was kind of the theme of these were veterans who were artists. So as you know, it's like really hard to wrangle people in who have very active lifestyles in New York City. But hopefully.
Are some of the Telling Project things... done by veterans who are not normally performers?
Yeah, in fact, most of them are.
Most of them are just real people telling
their
stories.
Just real people. And I think that's actually compelling in a different way because, you know, public speaking and performing is not something that everybody does. But when you go through the process of learning how to communicate that to an audience, it's both healing personally, but it's very compelling to see somebody up there owning their story in a way that's, you know, especially if it's the first time they've told it. So it's often just veterans who are living their life as teachers, you know, in any industry, and also family members who've been involved with the military. Maybe they've lost a loved one or something like that.
Wow. So tell us a little bit about yourself. You've got an interesting story.
I think you could probably tell it.
I could do the highlights, but... You're a missionary's kid?
I am.
You grew up overseas mostly?
Grew up in Taiwan.
In Taiwan? So you speak...
I speak Mandarin.
Mandarin, okay. But you're also a trained opera singer?
Right? Yes, I am a trained opera singer.
Did you do that? You went to school before you were in the Army?
I did. Okay. I did. I graduated from University of North Carolina. Actually, my college opera teacher, I was in an opera workshop, just called me today after she saw the Times article and was just blown away. So yeah, so I'm reconnecting with that. But I went to the University of North Carolina, graduated in 2001, but had been a performer all of my life. Grew up in Taiwan as a missionary kid, was church kid all of my life. And then when I graduated, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. Like most artists, you have this kind of crisis of, am I really going to do this for a living?
Sure.
So because I spoke languages, I decided or looked around for other opportunities. And I was in D.C. at the time, and 9/11 happened. And next thing you know, I'm typing into I think it was GoArmy.com or something at the time. And a recruiter calls me, and I'm in the process of becoming what I thought would be a Mandarin linguist.
Mm-hmm.
But I went all through basic training and then got orders to be an Arabic linguist. And, of course, as we all know now, the world changed after 9/11.
Yeah. And so you had to learn Arabic.
I did.
You had no Arabic experience before that, right?
None.
Awesome. And now do you speak fluently?
I do. I mean, you know, fluency is one of those relative things.
but you can have a conversation.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we had to be proficient in reading, writing, and speaking in my specific job.
Yeah. I never did well in languages. So it's amazing to me when I hear people like you tell a story like you learned in what, a year to speak Arabic?
That sounds to me like incomprehensible. Like, I couldn't learn to speak Spanish very well after studying it all through high school and college.
Yeah, 4 years of French in high school and I could barely speak it.
So.
About 6 months into Spanish in college, my Spanish teacher, whose name was April Chen, told me that maybe I should fulfill my foreign language requirements some other way besides learning Spanish, because it was not working out.
What are the other options?
At the time, we could actually fulfill our foreign language requirements by studying foreign literature in translation. So didn't have to.
I have shame about being like a bad, ignorant American person because I can't speak another language well.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe if you went to school today, you could like Twitter could be your
foreign language. Yeah, well, Twitter is a foreign language to me. That's for sure.
We had a whole show about that.
It would be easier for me to learn Spanish, I think, than to learn Twitter. We are going to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to talk to my mom. This is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network.
The following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential small hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
We're back. This is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network. We are speaking with B.R. McDonald of the Veterans Artist Program. I said project earlier. I apologize.
That's okay.
And Hannah Howard is here.
Hello.
And on the phone, a spectacular guest appearance. It's my mom. Hi, Mom.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine.
It's so nice to have you on the show, finally.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
So, hi, Brian's mom.
Hi. I can't wait to meet you, Hannah.
Oh, you've met Hannah.
Have
you
I met Hannah?
You came in to Casa Lula, like, opening night, opening week.
Years ago, yeah.
It's been a while.
Our little girl's grown up since then, though.
I'm sorry.
So,
I didn't remember.
So, Mom, you're on today because you recently had an experience at a restaurant that was less than perfect, and we talked about it, and I said, this is perfect for How to Behave. So,
I think so.
Tell our audience what happened.
Well, essentially, a friend and I went out to dinner to have a nice, quiet dinner for two. A lady friend and I went out. And about halfway through our meal, we were aware that the restaurant was getting very loud and noisy. And we mentioned it to our server, and she didn't have much to say about that. She just said, oh, well, she was very sorry about that, and she left. And it kept getting louder and louder, and eventually we were aware of two tables, probably six or eight people at each of these two round tables that were shoved together. And it was clear it was one party, and by now they had become very boisterous. They'd involved the waiter in their antics. They were laughing out loud. They were telling jokes. The waiter was running back and forth from one table to the other with a bottle of wine, fully a part of the festive feel of this group, but they were disrupting the entire restaurant. And we just felt there should have been perhaps something that management would have done to quiet this group. But essentially management said, well, we can't close the restaurant down for a small group like that, and then once they're here, we can't really control them.
Yeah, this was a group of business people or
they
like
were
a frat party?
Young business or, people. No, yeah. They were young business people, a mixture of men and women of various ages between 30-something and 40-something.
Yeah.
And it appeared that they were perhaps salespeople from out of town, and they were going out to dinner, which, you know, is understandable. I know people do that all the time.
And is this a restaurant that's normally pretty quiet?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a place you'd been before, and you went because you wanted a quiet conversation with your friend, right?
Yes. It's an Asian restaurant, and mostly it's quiet. They have a bar in one section, but it's small, so the bar isn't boisterous. And, of course, the people normally are just very quiet.
Yeah. So did you speak to a manager or an owner or anything, or did you just talk to the server?
Talked to the hostess when we left. Did not talk to management or the owner. I think by then we had brought it up three times, and we felt like we were really being pretty annoying, and they didn't seem very responsive, and I think maybe next time I go in, I might ask to speak to management and tell them. I think we just felt like we were already over the top with complaining, and we didn't want to be annoying.
Yeah. Well, we got some restaurant people in the room.
So. Yeah, so my initial thought is to put myself in the head of the person in the restaurant, like, what am I going to do with these people? And I'm going to kindly ask them to be considerate of their neighbors, but I kind of feel like they're not going to comply.
That's not
going to
work.
That's a completely ineffective solution. So, you know, other than, like, plying you and your dining companion with some kind of like kind gesture to try to compensate for this obnoxious table, I don't have another great idea.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of it, like you're right, Hannah, that you probably are not going to get that group to quiet down without really pissing them off.
Right.
And that creates a whole nother
set
of problems. But you can be aggressive about letting the other people in the restaurant know that you're aware of it and that you feel bad about it, and that this isn't normal, and we're sorry.
Right,
like, we talk
exactly
about this a lot. Like, the words, I'm sorry, go a long way.
Right, and I feel like that most people just want to know that you care and that you, like, you try, you know you care. So ignoring you guys wasn't a very good move on the behalf of the people that you thought you complained to, because I'm sure you were respectful and kind.
Well, I think that must have been part of our problem, too, because by the time we'd mentioned it three times and we got only a cursory, oh, well, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but it wasn't like, gee, we're going to try to do something about this. We became annoyed at that, not just the noise, but
right.
the fact that we were being neglected on our complaint.
Yeah, and there's something that we talk about a lot in the hospitality industry, which is that that problem situations are actually an opportunity. You can take somebody who's mad about something and have them leave raving about how well you handled the mm-hmm. situation. And it sounds like they did the opposite. They took a little problem, and their response to it became a bigger problem.
I think that's right.
Yeah. I think also there's a... I don't know if this is cynical, but like there's a value in pretending to care,
like. Absolutely.
But
you have to do it well.
But I mean,
it has to be convincing.
What I mean by that is, if a manager had come over to my mom's table and talked to them, and then said, "I'm so sorry, I understand that this is really ruining your evening, and I'm going to see what I can do," and then they go talk to the other table and ask them politely to keep it down, even though we all know that's probably not going to do much good.
Uh-huh.
It does send the message that this is a place that is concerned about their customers and
right.
cares
it's like
and is
a for effort, and I think the effort goes a long way. It's like you can't control the outcome, but you can control the actions that you take.
I agree.
Yeah.
And the actions make an impression.
And like at Casalula, we just put up the canvas thing over the door because it's wintertime and it's supposed to keep cold out of the what do we call that thing?
Vestibule.
The vestibule, thank you. I don't think the vestibule does very much, but if people are inside and the door opens and cold wind comes through, they get all upset, like we control the weather. And if they turn and see that there's a vestibule there, they go, oh, okay, they're trying to do something.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't really prevent cold air from coming in, but it makes people think that we're trying to do something.
It's like, you know, when you read a piece of writing, you know, it's like you want the author to have the authority. And it's almost like when you go out somewhere and partake in a experience like dining, you want to just like trust that the people who have created this experience have been thoughtful about it and
uh-huh.
know what they're doing. So even if they're not doing all of those moves perfectly, making those moves, that's a good sign.
Yeah, and free desserts would have gone a long way, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Free drinks.
Always.
I don't know if they did this, but I think one gesture they could have made would be to talk to their wait staff, the one man in particular who was participating in all of the antics at the table, because they had drawn him in. And he was having a good time as much as they were.
Yeah.
But, of course, he's standing up and he's waving his arms and he's laughing with them. So he was even more of a visual interruption than the people sitting at that table. They were just loud.
Yeah.
So,
when that happens to me, I feel like there's an inside joke that I'm not part of. Or, you know, I feel a little bit left out. It's like the little like uncool kid in me is like, oh, I want to. Play too.
That reminds me of the idea that the customer's always right. Like, there's a situation uh-huh. there where you have two customers who are diametrically opposed in what uh-huh. they believe is right. So,
that's
on
right.
one hand, the waiter who's gotten drawn into it is doing his job by doing what the customers want him to do to make their night be super fun.
That's true.
And at the same time, that's frustrating a lot of other customers. So, they're in a position of, you know, if they believe the customer's always right, which customer do they choose?
Right. Well, I think if the management had come over and just said, I understand this group as being very disruptive and we're really sorry, and made some gesture toward our comfort, that would have gone a long way.
Yeah.
So I don't think anything would have changed particularly. Other than we would have gone away thinking they really tried and they had our interest in mind.
Right,
but that's not
goes a long way.
Yeah, it does. And that's not how we felt when we left. Now, my friend had been there before many times, and she'd never had an experience like that. And I've been there many times and never had an experience like that. So I will go back. The food is very good, and they've always been very gracious. And I think it was just one of those situations for that evening.
Yeah. Well, good. But it's a good learning opportunity.
Yeah.
For those of
I
us
just
who
wondered
understand.
If I should have done something else, and I'm convinced that I did everything I could do.
Yeah, I think short of asking to speak to the manager, I think you did everything you could do.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't have to do that.
No, your behavior is not the questionable behavior in this incident.
So my behavior was exemplary.
Exactly. As always. Leading
as
by
one
example.
Would expect for Brian's mom.
Okay, so Mom, we're going to do the This Week in Behavior quiz. You're going to stick around for that?
Oh, sure.
Okay, don't worry. The stakes are really low. Nobody answers very many of these questions.
Okay.
But first, before we do that, I have one more question for BR, who introduced the event, the Telling Project, with the veterans on stage the other night. And in doing so, you talked about how the project is blowing up and exploding. And I thought, are those appropriate words to use when you're introducing a bunch of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans on stage?
We gotta have some kind of humor.
Yeah, you know that's true. I didn't even think about it, but I think that's probably the issue, right? I just didn't think.
Nobody else acted like they thought it was weird. Maybe it was only me.
Well, I think maybe Hannah,
a couple people jumped
this.
In their seats when you said that.
But. Well, what I've realized is that, you know, in the veteran world, in the marketing world, we use a lot of the same language. Like, things are blowing up, you know, and we need to really target things and do all these things.
Did you guys come off stage and go, oh my God, we killed him tonight?
Yeah. Guys, we killed him.
Okay.
By the way, I enjoyed listening to your dialogue with him. It was moving.
Yeah, it's really a great project. Anybody who's listening, I would encourage you to look for the Telling. What is it? The Telling?
Yeah, it's the Telling Project, and you can find it on veteranartistprogram.org.
Yeah, Veteran Artist Program does a lot of good stuff. So, okay, enough serious stuff. Let's get down to the fun. So the This Week in Behavior quiz, I'm going to read a question. If you think you know the answer, yell out your first name. I will choose whose name I heard first in my sole and exclusive discretion and let you answer. And if you get it wrong, somebody else gets to do it. Joe, our engineer, is standing in his microphone.
Yeah, I'm here. Sarah's actually been helping me engineer today's show a lot. So.
Okay, Sarah is the engineer in training?
Yes, maybe she'll give me some answers.
Okay, so are you guys going to be a team then?
Sure, let's go with
that. Okay, Joe and Sarah are a team. All right, so Amazon recently announced a deal with the U.S. Post Office. What will the U.S. Post Office and Amazon be offering together?
Joan! They'll be delivering on Sundays.
Yes!
And Saturdays.
No, just Sundays.
Is it just Sunday? Okay,
yeah.
They'll be delivering.
The post office already delivers on Saturdays. So,
okay.
Yeah, Amazon is apparently giving them some motivation to deliver on Sundays. All right, Mom is in the lead.
Go, Mom.
All right, we don't have a whole lot of time, so I'm going to skip some of the...
I actually
picked a lot of questions that are... you know what? Let's just do this. These are all a lot of issues that are important to Mom. So,
give Mom an edge.
I don't know that you'll know the answers, but who said this... this weekend, quote, they wasn't supposed to be here, whoever they was, end quote.
A girl at a party where somebody killed some people.
Nailed it!
She was having her birthday party, and there were some guests there, and they shot bullets up into the air in celebration, and she didn't know who they were, and she said they wasn't supposed to be here.
Whoever they was,
yeah.
That is true.
You guys conspire on this.
Well,
quiz.
No, but I just
I see how it goes.
I just realized where my news reading habits came from. Apparently, every week,
where your what?
My news reading habits. Every week, I ask questions that are just in the news, and everybody looks at me like I'm a crazy person. And you apparently read the same things I do. All right, we're gonna bring it home now. A member of a Brooklyn indie rock band who was recently kicked out of the band did what this weekend?
Joe. Killed the rest of his bandmates and committed suicide.
That is almost entirely correct. One of his bandmates survived.
Oh, okay.
He killed three of them and then killed himself. I'm doing this, Mom, because I know how important gun control is to you.
Yes. Now, see, if that man hadn't had a gun, why?
Right.
Those people would still be alive.
Okay, this is not related to guns. In October, William Footman, 55, was arrested in New York for robbing 37 banks. What was he taking from the banks? Oh, hint, it was not money. This is a toughie.
Cookies.
No,
those
he
little mint things.
He was stealing doormats and then selling them to bodegas.
He was stealing donuts?
Doormats.
Oh, doormats.
Where you wipe your feet.
Oh.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem very lucrative.
He says he made about $30 per, but he did 37 of them. So, you know, it adds up. All right. This is the last question. We're going to go with a fun one. I've got a lot of gun violence in here, but we're going to just go with a fun one. This is actually not fun, but at least nobody died. Okay. What university has more national championships than black male freshmen?
Oh, I didn't read that.
Is it the University of Alabama?
No, but I will give you a hint. It is a school. It is the school that has the most national championships. So they have a high bar to reach in terms of black male freshmen.
I don't know.
Nobody?
I don't know.
It is my alma mater, UCLA.
Wow.
Really?
Yes. And UCLA responds, and I think there's legitimacy to this, which is they're not allowed to consider race when they... approve admissions or when they choose who's in their class.
So they have lots of Asian males.
I'm sure they have more Asian males than they have national championships. But, yeah, the state of California has a long way to go to get their education system back to the way it was when I grew up there.
Huh.
Yeah, gives you something to think about, Mom, huh?
That's interesting. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, well... That is all the time that we have for today. So a big thanks to my guests, B.R. McDonald of the Veterans Artist Program.
Thank you.
And my mom, Joan Kaiser. Thanks for joining us, Mom.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks to the woman who hid her real identity as a cross-dressing cabaret singer and ventriloquist throughout 3 tours in Iraq, Hannah Howard.
That's me.
Thanks, Hannah. The How to Behave theme is courtesy of John Lundbaum and Big Five Chord. Check them out at BigFiveChord.com. Thanks to Joe Galarraga for engineering today's show and for Sarah, who's training. You can always find episodes of How to Behave and lots of other great shows at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm Brian Kaiser, and please thank a veteran for their service today. Or better yet, offer them a job. This is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.